Scott Merrick, this is Scott Sloan.
And Alaska Bob.
Sending you a northern shout out to Snacks for the Brain podcast from Anchorage, Alaska. We really enjoy the geek out sessions.
Hey, speak for yourself, Mr. Alaska Pod Show Podcast. You're more of a nerd than I am.
Hey there, Bob. Be nice.
Ah, sheesh.
Okay, thanks for all the snacks, Scott Merrick.
Yep, thanks.
And keep on podcasting down there. See ya.
Hello, y'all. This is Scott Merrick with Snacks for the Brain. Fiddler's Home Comes the Rover from the Podsafe Music Network. Check out that music at music.podshow.com. Well, this Snacks for the Brain, Snacks 22, I'd like to bring you some audio from a forum that I attended on January the 12th at the Adventure Science Center here in Nashville, Tennessee. This was a forum presented by the Center for Science Outreach, all about biomedical engineering. We expected the turnout to be light, and it was. So since you probably missed the forum, I'd like to bring you a little bit of audio from it and give you some sort of idea of what went on. I found it fascinating. I didn't know that much about biomedical engineering. All three presenters were just amazingly personable and friendly and accessible. So I'll give you some audio cues as we go along so that you know who's talking, and a little bit of intro before each audio. Hope you enjoy this. Here's Dr. Stacy Klein telling middle schoolers and high schoolers what they need to do to become engineers.
So, you say you want to be an engineer. We've won you over tonight. Here's about how you go about doing it. So whether you're middle school or high school, obviously you want to head on to college. You don't have to major in engineering. As an undergraduate, you can major in one of the sciences, or some other interesting programs that are in physics and engineering. From there, we would encourage you to either, you could go on to graduate or professional school, or you could go ahead and head down to industry. If you go to graduate school, you could get a master's degree first, which both of these guys have, and I have one of two. And if you choose, you can continue on to get a doctorate, whether that's a PhD, or you could go to medical school. From there, there are a lot of different paths you can follow. You could go into industry, get a job, work in a lab there, work at Siemens Medical Imaging or something like that. You could go into the government. You could work there. You could work in the patent office or work for the National Institutes of Health or the National Science Foundation. You could be like me. You could go be a K-12 teacher. Or if you wanted to, you could be a university professor. You could be like me, yeah. And there you might teach a class in biomechanics, like I do every year. You might teach freshman biology or something like that, and do research in an area that you're passionate about, like you've heard these guys describe their research. So the things we would encourage you to do if you're interested in any kind of engineering or science, take as much math and science as you can get your hands on. Be daring. Take classes you might not think of taking. You know, take as many as you possibly can. Take the advanced route in some classes, but don't feel like you have to take AP everything or IB everything. But get a good base of math and science while you're in middle and high school, because that will only help you when you get to college if you've seen some of these areas before. And one thing I want to remind you about is to don't ignore your writing skills. I laugh at myself because I went to be an engineer because I didn't want to write. And all I do is write now. But I write scientifically, and that much I enjoy. So you want to practice those verbal skills. You want to practice your presentation skills, because as you see from what we're doing tonight, you're often called upon to make a presentation, to share what you're doing, to put what you're doing at a very high, sophisticated level into common terms that anyone can understand, so that our general public can understand science better. I would also encourage you to search out extracurricular activities, things that you might be a member of the science club, or you might go on different field trips that are made available to you. Find things that challenge you and interest you. They don't all have to be math and science, but get involved in something that you're passionate about. Also, look for any opportunities that you can to shadow engineers. And so by that, I mean go to work with an engineer for a day. See what they do on a daily basis. You know, tag along, follow them, or shadow a medical doctor. Shadow someone anything. Look for other summer programs, whether they're held here at Vanderbilt in Nashville or they're off somewhere else. But there's a lot available to you to give you ideas about what you could do in the future. So take advantage of them.
Here's PhD candidate Josh Beckham with a really good question.
The question is, what's an engineer doing in an operating room? We usually think of medical doctors being an operating room, but engineers becoming more important in the OR. So image-guided surgery, the problem is a doctor needs to be able to find tumors in the brain. Remember I said that some tumors look very similar to regular tissue, so we have to have some way of finding out where they are. So in this situation, they use MRI. Remember, MRI looks at soft tissues like the brain, to make a map of the brain and tell the doctors where to go. Also, there's a problem when you cut open the skull to do brain surgery, the brain will kind of sag, sort of like jello or something. And so that means that the position of the tumor will change a little bit, and it's harder for the doctor to know exactly where it was. So this is an old way of doing it. You put a bunch of images up, and the doctor has to kind of look on the wall and then look down at his patient. But now what we do is we have, the doctor has a little probe, sort of like this, and this is connected to the computer by remote control, basically. And wherever he puts this probe, he can see where it is on the computer screen. So he knows exactly where he's going, and he can know exactly where a tumor might be. So in this case, he's got two different views to look at. Say that maybe this is he's fixing an aneurysm, which is a broken blood vessel in the brain, which is a very big problem. And let's say the aneurysm is here, then he can look on this view, which actually shows the arteries or, where the aneurysm might be, and he can find out where to go.
Finally, here's PhD candidate Jerry Womack talking about the serious threat that the United States faces because so few students are becoming motivated to go into the sciences. Check this out.
We increase the number of citizens who are trained to become scientists and engineers right now. And the demand is really up because we're getting so high-tech and there's all these jobs that require science and engineering and people aren't going to get these degrees that are required for these type of positions. So I just wanted to first just kind of make you aware of this situation. The actual Department of Education issued a critical warning in 2004, and it's pretty important, so I just want you guys to know. This is a problem, but it's an opportunity for young scientists to get involved, because there is positions, and great positions available. So how can we improve in our test-taking skills? Internationally, we're not testing as well as a lot of these other countries, and we're not producing the same number of engineers. So we need to get excited about science again. In terms of international testing, we placed 24th out of 28 nations. And I'm not so sure of that statistic. I've read some more recent stuff, but it's pretty low in terms of science and math right now. 22% of our eighth graders are proficient in math and science. That's a lot. That's pretty sad. And in high schoolers, I got some high schoolers here, less than 6% of seniors plan to pursue engineering degrees. So this is scary because scientists and engineers can fuel our economy, so it's really important. 8% of PhDs here in the world are outside of the United States. And of that, those 20% that we do produce in the United States, like 60% actually normally don't even remain in the United States. So it's a serious dilemma. I just want to make people aware that's being down, and just that I think awareness is important to produce any kind of action. And China produces 6 times as many engineers as us. And Japan, with half of our population, produces twice as many scientists and engineers. So these are what kind of people are saying right now. The National Security Commission, our Caribbean Commission. The failure for our math and science education poses a greater threat than any potential conventional war. This is the commission that's in charge of terrorism, and this is what they're saying. David Baltimore, President of California Institute of Technology, Nobel Prize winner, we can't keep intact our standard of living, our national security, our way of life. Americans are competitive in science, period. A guy from the company, Honeywell, said if we don't get the students excited about science by middle school, it's too late.
I guess that pretty much says it all. This is Scott Merrick from Snacks for the Brain. Thanks for listening to Snacks 22. And as always, check out the website at www.vanderbilt.com/CSO for much more information about what the Vanderbilt Center for Science Outreach does to connect K-12 students with working research scientists and get them interested in science.
The music for today's podcast has been graciously provided by the Podcast Music Network at music.podshow.com.
See ya!